Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayana, unto Narayana Rishi, the Supreme Lord Shiva King, unto Mother Saraswati, the Goddess of Learning, and unto Shri Vyasadeva, the author. Nasta Prayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Nastaki. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to a pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service under the personality of God, whose praise through transcendental songs is established as an irrevocable fact. So we're reading from the fourth canto, chapter 30, the activities of the Prachetas, text number 48. Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Madisham Upaye Mire,
Madisham Upaye Mire,
Yasyam Mahat Avagyana,
Yasyam Mahat Avagyana,
Tacham Yajana Yonijaha,
Tacham Yajana Yonijaha.
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Adisham Upaye Mire,
Adisham Upaye Mire,
Yasyam Mahatabhyana,
Yasyam Mahatabhyana,
Janya Jana Yo Nichaha,
Janya Jana Yo Nichaha,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Adisham Upaye Mire,
Adisham Upaye Mire,
Yasyam Mahadabhyana,
Yasyam Mahadabhyana,
Janya Jana Yoni Jaha,
Janya Jana Yoni Jaha,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Adisham Upaye Mire,
Marisham Upaye Mire,
Yasyam Mahadabhyana,
Achanya Jana
Yonijaha,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Marisham Upaye Mire,
Marisham Upaye Mire,
Yasyam Mahadabhyana,
Yasyam Mahadabhyana,
Achanya Jana Yonijaha,
Achanya Jana Yonijaha,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Marisham Upaye Mire,
Marisham Upaye Mire,
Yasyam Mahat Avajnyada,
Yasyam Mahat Avajnyada,
Ajani Ajana Yoni Jahan,
Ajana Yoni Jahan,
Techa Brahmana Adeshan,
Marisham Upaye Mire,
Yasyam Mahadabhyana,
Ajanya Jana Yonijaha, Techa Brahmana Adeshan, Marisham Upaye Mire, Yasyam Mahadabhyana, Ajanya Jana Yonijaha. 10.
All the Prachetas.
All the Prachetas.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Brahmana.
Brahmana.
Of Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
Adeshat.
Adeshat.
By the order.
By the order.
Marisham.
Marisham.
Marisha.
Manisha.
Upaye Mirei.
Upaye Mirei.
Married.
Married.
Yasyam.
Yasyam.
In whom?
In whom?
Mahat.
Mahat.
To a great personality.
To a great personality.
Avagyanat.
Avagyanat.
On account of disrespect.
On account of disrespect.
Ajani.
Ajani.
To birth.
Birth.
Ajana Yonija.
Ajana Yonija.
The son of Lord Brahma Daksha.
The son of Lord Brahma Daksha.
Translation. Following the order of Lord Brahma, all the Prachetas accepted the girl as their wife. From the womb of this girl, the son of Lord Brahma named Daksha took birth. Daksha had to take birth from the womb of Marisha due to his disobeying and disrespecting Lord Mahadeva, Shiva. Consequently, he had to give up his body twice. In this connection, the word Mahad Avagyanat is significant. King Daksha was the son of Lord Brahma. Therefore, in a previous birth, he was a Brahmana. But because of his behaving like a non-Brahmana, a Brahmana, by insulting or disrespecting Lord Mahadeva, he had to take birth within the semen of a Kshatriya. Okay, I'm just going to start going over this now before finishing the purport. But it seems that Daksha is the son of Brahma, and he was a Brahmin. He committed offenses to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was... There was a big sacrifice, and all the demigods were there, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. And when Daksha came in, I don't believe Brahma stood up either, but Brahma was the creator, the father, so he doesn't have to. But Shiva is his son-in-law. So the son-in-law should respect the father-in-law like one's father. But Shiva was in meditation, so he didn't get up to give respect to Daksha. Besides that, there's no comparison between Shiva and Daksha. Shiva is practically, Vishnu, practically. He's Shiva Tattva. He's not an ordinary Jiva soul. Daksha is an ordinary Jiva soul. But because of the material, external position, there's some, like for instance, Krishna, he would offer respects to his superiors, and then with his equals, he would deal with in a friendly manner, and with his subordinates, he would give them blessings. So this is just Krishna himself set an example how there's proper etiquette behavior that one should follow. Now, and we should all learn this proper etiquette ourselves and behave properly. How are you supposed to treat others? Even the golden rule is treat others as you want them to treat you. But in the case, there are exceptions. There are exceptions. Like, for instance, if Krishna, somehow or other, you're in a superior external position from Krishna. If he wants to keep that position, that's fine. You have to respect it, even though you know he's the Supreme Lord. But at the same time, if he does it, he wants to be the Supreme Lord, you have to offer your respectful obeisance, whether you're a older cousin or whatever it might be. So, Lord Shiva, he is a Shiva Tattva. He's not Jiva Tattva, he's not Vishnu Tattva, he's in between. He's like Vishnu contacting the material nature, coming in touch with nature. Krishna, Vishnu were never really in touch. They're always in the spiritual world. So anyway, Daksha didn't like that he didn't stand up, and he starts speaking badly about him. Some people are just so puffed up, not directly, but talking about Lord Shiva. So he was insulting him. Then he's doing another sacrifice, and Lord Shiva is not even invited, which is an offense, because if you're inviting the demigods, you have to invite all the demigods. But he didn't even invite Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva was fine. He could care less about Daksha and his programs. He wasn't like, oh man, nobody likes me. He didn't have that inferiority complex. He knew who he was. He meditated on Krishna. He didn't care about all this external stuff. But his wife, Sati, who is the daughter of Daksha, she tried to convince Lord Shiva, her husband, let's go. And he said, no, we shouldn't go. And then she said, I'm going to go. And he told her, you shouldn't go. If you go, you will be sorry. Don't go. And he explained a lot more, but basically she wasn't hearing anything. She thought, this is my father. A daughter can go to her father's house anytime. She doesn't have to be invited. She doesn't need an invitation to go see her father. So she tried to argue with Lord Shiva, but it didn't work. He knew what the future would be if she went. So she still went. And he sent his followers. They went to follow her to try to protect her. So when she went in, and her sisters were so happy to see her. All her sisters were there. Her mother was there. They were so happy. She didn't start to socialize. She just went directly to her father because she was quite upset with him. Why he didn't invite Shiva, who was so much more superior to him. And Daksha just ignored his daughter, didn't try to console her, she became so angry that she just sat down, and within her body, this body, she said, comes from you, therefore it's contaminated, I don't want this body anymore. She sat down, and from within, a fire came out, and she burned herself. She didn't have to sit in a fire, she could just do it on her own. And when she did this, of course, this is called the Sati Rite, and the Sati Rite was done even after that by the wife when the husband died. The husband would be on the funeral pyre, and the wife would just voluntarily go onto the fire and give up her life, because it says that it was more difficult for the wife to live without the husband. More difficult than the flames of the fire. They could tolerate the flames of the fire more than they could the separation of their husband. And then later on, this Sati Rite became a thing that you had to do, whether you wanted to do it or not. and then the Hindus would make the woman go onto the fire. They would basically kill her, throw her onto the fire, and like it or not. And then it became illegal, finally, where you can't do this no more, Sati Rite. But it was a policy at one time which was based on the attachment for the spiritually advanced husband, and there's so much you can't do without it. But anyway, so this was an offense. Of course, what happened with Lord Shiva's men, they went and they just wrecked the whole, they started cursing each other, there was a problem. They destroyed a lot of things, but they, because of Brigham Muni, I think it was powerful. He chanted some mantras and he kept them away. They couldn't. They went back to Lord Shiva. When Lord Shiva heard this, he became upset. He took a hair, I think, from his head, threw it down on the ground. Maybe he laughed like a madman. I don't remember, but I know when we did a play, he laughed like a madman. Threw it down. And then I think Virabhadra, I think his name is. I'm not positive. I think it might even say it in here. Yeah, Virabhadra. He appeared. And I remember, anybody know Atindriya? You know Atindriya. He played Virabhadra in one play we did. And he said, and his one line was, how can I serve you, Master? That was it. And then he went to and he destroyed it. And he killed Daksha. He tried cutting his head. He tried killing him.
cutting his head with so many things. Finally, the instrument meant to kill the goat, he used that and cut off Daksha's head, and he threw his head into the fire. So Daksha was dead. Then they, you know, the demigods, they realized that, you know, sticking up for Daksha is the wrong thing. They had to go back and apologize to Shiva. And Shiva was going to bring Daksha back to life, but his head was destroyed. So they took the goat's head and put it on Daksha's head. So then he had a goat's head. And it's interesting how Prabhupada explains how, even though your brain, the brain is not, you know, that we think our brain is, makes us smart. It's actually more in the heart. There's actually scientifically, there's been people with pieces of their brain gone and function completely fine. There's been a lot of things, but there used to be head transplants you can do in those days. So they put a goat's head. It was the only thing available at the time. So Daksha had a goat's head. Now, I'm assuming that this Daksha with the goat's head died and then took birth again as the son of this, of the wife of the Prachetas. I'm just guessing it. I don't know for sure, but now I'll read a little bit more. That is to say, he became the son of the Prachetas. Not only that, but because of his disrespecting Lord Shiva, he had to undergo the tribulation of taking birth from within the womb of a woman. I guess previously, you know, you just appeared. I don't know how else you take birth. I mean, that's all we know how to take birth in this age. But I guess previously Brahma expanded himself. I mean, there was only Brahma. There wasn't, even when he had his wife, if you look at Brahma's wife, how is she his wife? She ultimately, she had to come from him. He had to create her, but he created her in a mood of a wife. So he had a wife, but he also just from his mind, so powerful, he could create. So I imagine he was originally created probably from the mind of Brahma, but now he had to take birth in the womb of a woman. That's terrible. I mean, we didn't know there was any other way you can take birth. So, in the Daksha Yagya arena, he was once killed by Lord Shiva's servant, Virabhadra. Because that was not sufficient, he again took birth from the womb of Marisha. So, he was so sinful, he had to get killed twice. Like, generally, if someone kills someone, the punishment is supposed to be they get killed. And the reason for that, it says that this is the Manu Samhita, that's the least amount of suffering they can get. If they're killed for their crime, then they suffer that one time and it's over. All their sin from that activity is gone. If they're not killed, if they're put in prison for life, then they have to suffer so much more. Again, it doesn't, so it says when a king kills a murderer, it's out of mercy, because that's the least amount of punishment you can get. So here, he was so offensive, he had to get killed twice, take birth twice, because he was so offensive for that one particular offense to Lord Shiva. At the end of Daksha Yagya and the disastrous incident there, Daksha offered his prayer to Lord Shiva. Although he had to give up his body and take birth from the womb of a woman impregnated by the semen of a kshatriya, he received all opulence by the grace of Lord Shiva. So here now, in Vedic culture, we see there's a lot about this Kshatriyas and Brahmins and the different castes. And now this is like a disgrace, a Brahmin now taking birth as a Kshatriya. That's like a fall down. Now, we in Krishna consciousness and Kali Yuga, this is Kali Yuga, everyone is born a Shudra. So we have to work from a really low position to try to come up to a higher standard.
And we know what the highest standard is, how we can become a Brahmin, but we have to work at doing that. But you can. And the example is like, just like iron, when it's touched with, it says when iron is mixed and by an alchemist can turn into gold. So similarly, a low-born person can turn into a Brahmin by the touch or of the pure devotee, not just physical touch, but by following the instructions, by the mercy of the pure devotee. But here it was like more of a disgrace that I was a Brahmin, now I'm a Kshatriya. I mean, we think, what's the difference? I'm Lord Chaitanya, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Shudra, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a vanaprastha, I'm not a grihastha, I'm not a brahmachari. I'm a servant of the servant of Krishna. So that's the transcendental view. We're not any of these things. Those are just the body. So you may have a body, and even it says, like, even a pure devotee, whether his body is deformed, whatever it might be, he still has to be accepted as completely pure. So, but when we read 5,000 years ago, these things seem to, people were very much into this. And the difference is then and now is people were born in Brahmin families, they were almost always Brahmins. But we even have the example of Aswatthama. He was born in a Brahmin family and he was called Brahma Bandhu, or relative of a Brahmin. He was very sinful, he wasn't acting as a Brahmin. You know, a Brahmin, even in Chaturvanya Maya Shrestha Guna Karma Vibhagasaha, according to your qualities and work, you're a Brahmin, or Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. That determines it, not birth. But generally, people born in Brahmin families were Brahmins. And here, people born in Kshatriya families were Kshatriyas. But there are examples of Kshatriyas who became Brahmins. What's Vishwamitra Muni? Wasn't he a Kshatriya? Somebody?
There was this mistake. There was Vishwamitra Muni and Parashurama. And there was a sacrifice made, and then they switched the sweetfries. The one lady drank the other ones. So that's why I was mixed up.
I'm not sure what. So what happened?
It's all from there was the queen. She was married to a king. She was a Brahmana. King is a Brahmana. She had a daughter.
King is a Kshatriya.
King is a Kshatriya. Mm-hmm. She had a daughter. And daughter was married to a sage. The sage was Brahma. So the idea was they wanted to have powerful sons.
Okay.
So they asked the sage who married the daughter of the queen to make a sacrifice so they would get powerful sons.
Okay.
So he made a sacrifice and he produced two cups of sweet rice and gave one to his wife and the one was for the queen. But then the queen, she thought, well, most probably the sweet rice did for my daughter is more powerful because the sage is married to her. He made better stuff for my daughter. So she convinced the daughter to switch. The sweet rice is, when the sage came back, his wife told him what happened. And then he said, you should have done this because I arranged that you would get a Brahmana son and she will get a Kshatriya son. And now, you will get it's all messed up. So the queen, she got Vishwamitra, who was born to the Kshatriya, and he was basically had all qualities of a Brahmana. The sage, he was supposed to get a Kshatriya. So that was a Parashurama, was actually came from there. Not directly, but indirectly. It was not the first generation, but the second. There was something like he made some exception. But Parashurama was there, and Parashurama was born as a Brahmana. In a Brahmana family, but he was acting as a Kshatriya.
I vaguely remember it, but I don't remember it too well. But Vishnu Mita Muni, he was a Kshatriya, and he had this fight at one time, I don't remember which, but a Brahmin. And he was, whatever he did, the Brahmin was more powerful. So then he decided to become a Brahmin. Then after he became a Brahmin, he also messed up another time after finally getting all this power, and somebody agitated him, and he used his power like more as a Kshatriya, and then he realized this is wrong, I'm just gonna, and then he started doing, then he started becoming a, he was in competition with somebody, Vishwamitra Muni, another, with a Brahmin, who wanted to outdo him. Even somebody went to him and wanted, wanted to go to heavenly planets, make a stairway to the heavenly planets, and he approached this one sage who was in competition with Vishwamitra Muni. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. If you want to go, you got to be pious, you know. But when he went to Vishwamitra Muni and asked the same thing, he found out the other one wouldn't do it. He tried to do it and build a stick. And they were just really very competitive. He was trying to be a Brahmin so bad. So for some reason, you know, I mean, we do know that Brahmins are, you know, in a higher position than Kshatriya, but that is really just external. Because you can be a pure devotee, you know, that example, the Brahmin and the cobbler. Cobbler is going back to Godhead in this life, and the Brahmin is going to take another 100 births, so it doesn't really matter. It's how much of a devotee you are. So although he had to give up his body and take birth from the womb of a woman impregnated by the semen of a Kshatriya, he received all opulence by the grace of Lord Shiva. These are the subtle laws of material nature. Unfortunately, people in this modern age do not know how these laws are working. Having no knowledge of the eternity of the spirit soul and its transmigration, the population of the present age is in the greatest ignorance. So people can't understand these things. They're just in ignorance. Because of this, it is said in the Bhagavatam 110, Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagya Hi Upadutaha. The total population in this age of Kali Yuga is very bad, lazy, unfortunate, and disturbed by material conditions. So that's describing what we're at like. So disturbed. So if you're disturbed, if you're ever disturbed, you know that's the nature of Kali Yuga. Just continue serving Krishna, even in your disturbed condition, and you'll get purified. You won't be disturbed. You know, we have bad karma. You know, we have good karma, we have bad karma, we have bad reactions, we're going to suffer. But we can still suffer those reactions and not be affected by it. In other words, I don't have to suffer. I don't have to really suffer and feel this suffering in order to burn off my karma. I just have to get the reaction, and I can choose how to react to the reaction. If I react to the reaction in a positive way, seeing it as Krishna's mercy, then I'm still burn off the karma. It's not like, oh, you're still going to have to suffer because you went through the suffering. Like for instance, you buy a brand new car and then it gets smashed up, and most people, oh man, you know, and they suffer a little, not tremendous. Some people may suffer a lot because they're so attached. But if you just, what's the big deal, chant Hare Krishna, you know, Krishna will take care of it. I have insurance. So, the example of the car is like something
we can also relate to is not so terrible. But when things happen to us, when we're mistreated, you know, we should see this Krishna's arrangement. I must have done something in a past life to this person. But I shouldn't react by doing something else to that person, because then it's just going to continue. Just accept it. No big deal. I deserve it. Actually, I deserve worse. That's the way the devotee should think. Whatever's happening, I deserve worse than this. This is nothing compared to what I deserve. And I'm only seeing this life. I'm not seeing my past lives, what I deserve. Even in this life. And this, the karmas are just so opposite. It's like, what did I do? I didn't do anything to deserve this. You know, I'm like such a good person. And devotee, a real devotee, sees, you know, so many things he does that he shouldn't do. You know, he shouldn't react this way. He shouldn't get angry. He shouldn't get upset. You know, especially dealing with other devotees. Not that the other devotees are pure devotees. Obviously, if they're pure devotees, we're not going to get upset. We'll be very happy with their association. But because they're not pure devotees, and we're not pure devotees, therefore, then there's this reaction where I get upset. And then I may even do things to get them upset. You know, I'm upset. Misery loves company. I'll make you upset. So this is not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is, okay, you did this to me, fine. I deserve it. Devotee, I mean, look at pure devotees. They make everyone feel good. Prabhupada, everyone in Prabhupada's association felt so wonderful. You didn't even think of anything else. You're just there, and it was like, you didn't think like, well, I got to do this, or I got to do that. You know, none of those thoughts even came. Just being there was it. You were there. So being in the association of pure devotees. And he always treated everyone. He encouraged everyone. Sometimes he chastised, but that was only if you really needed it. He knew how to deal perfectly with everyone. Even when he chastised, it wasn't always. So like, for instance, he chastised Bhagava. Bhagava, I know him from New York when I first started going to the temple, but he was a photographer. He was really into taking pictures. So Prabhupada's there, and in those days you didn't have the cameras you have now. You don't hear anything. It was single lens reflex or something. You hear all this clicking. You know, so he's taking pictures, and Prabhupada told him, he said, because there was a program that night. He said, I do not want you to come to the program tonight. I don't want you to come to the program. He said something like that. He was upset with him because he kept ruining everything. He's trying to speak. And, you know, I'm reading, I'm saying that, come on, you know. So that night, he was really fried. He couldn't go to the program. So he just left and he walked around somewhere in downtown. I don't know. He was just like, his life was finished. You know, he displeased Srila Prabhupada. And then after the program, Prabhupada asked, where's Bhagava? And they said, well, you told him something. They didn't tell him. They just said they went looking. So the devotees went, and he said, I want to see Bhagava. So they went looking all over, and they finally got him, and they brought him to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, why didn't you go to the program? And he said, sure, Prabhupada, you told me not to go. He said, even if I tell you not to go, still you should go. Not that don't go to the program. Stop you taking you these pictures. I'm trying to concentrate. So the pure devotee is always like that. Okay. Any questions or comments? What?
Another one. Etiquette is to follow. There's a lot of one in particular I remember is if somebody came to the temple and there was a younger devotee and an older devotee, older guru. Younger devotee wouldn't preach the
right.
A person.
Right, in the presence of the senior devotee. Right. Yeah, there's a lot of etiquettes that are not followed. They've kind of like, I mean, there are some places these things are still followed. Like if you go to Chaupati, people are trained really good there. And they seem to follow proper etiquette from what I saw when I was there. So there are some temples, but most temples, it's like, you can't get people to not have their back to the deities or Prabhupada. Even that one simple thing, which when you joined in, or when Prabhupada was here, you never did that. You know, you see everybody else and you just hold and that's it. And everyone followed. It's not a big deal. Now, almost half the audience is just with their backs to Prabhupada. So I mean, that's I mean, there's so many things, but there are a lot of proper Vaishnava etiquette that people don't follow so much. Anybody else think of any other Vaishnava etiquettes that used to be there? Offering obeisances. We always offer obeisances to devotees. Now we just do one time in the morning for everybody for the whole day.
One time, you're supposed to see your devotee. This is it's all started by early days, and you know the etiquette is when you come to a temple room, you offer dandavats. You know, you knock the door, you offer your pranams. And I guess apparently a fight broke out in a temple room. So the person who ran in to break up the fight offers obeisances when he came in, and then he got up and broke up the fight. So, it's, I mean, again, it seems kind of silly, but. Still, it was some grain in devotees at the time.
Like in karate.
Yeah. And even in an emergency, they were conscious of it.
Well, there's some emergencies that you have to forego the etiquette. You know, if the place is built burning, and you come in to get the deities, you don't have to offer obeisances, just get the deities and get out. You know, I mean, there's. Then afterwards, you can offer obeisances and explain to him. Even with Lord Chaitanya. Mm-hmm. With Lord Chaitanya, you're not supposed to walk over a person. And he says, there's something like you can walk over a dead body, although we pretty much never walk over a dead body. But that's okay. But you don't walk over a person. So Lord Chaitanya was sleeping in the doorway, and I think it was Govinda, and let's just say Govinda, I'm not positive. He had to massage him, but he couldn't massage him, so he stepped over him to massage him. And after he finished massaging him, he waited, and then Lord Chaitanya woke up, and he asked, it was Govinda, I'm not positive, but he asked him, why are you here? How come you didn't go take prasadam? And he said, well, because I didn't want to step over you. He said, but you weren't here before. You had to step over me, you know, to get in. He said, well, yes, I stepped over you to do service. But for prasadam, I didn't want to commit an offense. So even you can commit an offense if the goal is to serve Krishna. You know, so for Lord Chaitanya, for serving him, to massage him, he had to step over him. He was willing to accept that offense, you know, whatever it is, because he doesn't care about himself, he just cares about the Lord. But for taking prasadam, he wouldn't commit that offense.
Okay. I was at the room where the Lord Chaitanya was back at the temple where the Garuda Stampa and the
woman
lady climbed on him to get up on the Garuda Stampa, and one of his servants chastise the lady, and Lord Chaitanya said, don't chastise her. She has some, I wish I had her eagerness to see Krishna.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
Yeah, no, but he was so strict with women, but he let this woman climb up on top of him because she was just seeing Jagannath or Krishna. I mean, Jagannath, but
She noticed, she didn't even notice Lord Chaitanya, and he didn't want to interfere with her love for Krishna, so he allowed that to happen. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we can't do these things. We don't know. We're not on that high transcendental platform. But we can learn what at least the proper thing is. So in general, there is an etiquette to follow, but there are exceptions even for following proper etiquette. I don't know how much I can read. I guess it's tough, but
I'm sorry, something came. But isn't the root of the etiquette just the deep respect for others? That's where it's born.
Yeah, that's okay. That, if you have that, then you will almost for certain follow the proper etiquette. But for those who don't have that, you have to practice. Just like the offer obeisances, Garga Muni told Prabhupada, he doesn't, you know, everyone's offering obeisances. He said, I don't bow down because I don't feel like doing it. And Prabhupada said, but if you do it, and then you will feel like doing it. So you practice the etiquette for those. It doesn't have to be on. So you, in other words, if you're on the spontaneous platform and you love Krishna spontaneously, you genuinely just love Krishna, you don't have to follow any rules. But for those who don't, aren't on that platform, we have to follow so many rules to get to that platform. And usually when you get to that platform, you follow the rules anyway, because what a great man does, common men follow. So I'm going to read a little bit. In 1948, Abai closed his Lucknow factory. He had fallen behind in employees' salaries, and since 1946 he had been paying past rent in installments. But when sales dropped off, continuing the factory became impossible. He lost everything. Srila Prabhupada. I started a big laboratory in Lucknow. Those were golden days. My business flourished like anything. Everyone in the chemical business knew, but then gradually everything dwindled. With the help of some acquaintances in Allahabad, he opened a small factory there in the same city where his Prayag pharmacy had failed 15 years before. He moved to Allahabad with his son Vrindavan and continued manufacturing medicines, while the rest of the family remained at Banerjee Lane in Calcutta. Abai continued his traveling, but now he was often away for months at a time. And then he had the dream of a second time. Srila Bhakti Siddhartha Saraswati appeared before him. Again he was beckoning, indicating that Abai should take sannyas. And again Abai had to put the dream aside. He was a householder with many responsibilities. To take sannyas would mean to give up everything. He had to earn money. He had five children. Why is Guru Maharaj asking me to take sannyas? He thought. It was not possible now. The Allahabad business was unsuccessful. At present, the condition of our business is not very good. He wrote his servant, Gauranga, who had asked to rejoin him. When the condition gets better, and if you are free at that time, I will call for you. He worked earnestly, but results were meager. As with everything else, Abai saw his present circumstances through the eyes of Scripture, and he could not help but think of the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasyaham anugranami harisye tadanam shanai. Tato danam tyajantyasya svajana dukha dukitam. When I feel especially merciful towards someone, I gradually take away all his material possessions. His friends and relatives then reject this poverty-stricken and most wretched fellow. He had heard Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati quote the verse, and now he thought of it often. He took it that his present circumstances were controlled by Lord Krishna, who was forcing him into a helpless position, freeing him from preaching for preaching Krishna consciousness. So that's the way the devotee sees this. I mean, I'm losing everything. I don't have anything. Krishna, will you hate me? Why are you doing it? You see, this is Krishna loves me so much. He's doing this to me so I can surrender more. That's how a devotee thinks. That's how Prabhupada thought. Srila Prabhupada, somehow or other, my intention for preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu increased, and the other side decreased. I was not disinclined, but Krishna forced me. You must give it up. The history is known. How it decreased, decreased, decreased. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti had also prayed, my dear Lord Krishna, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. Materially exhausted. We have nothing else. We have nothing else I want. There's nothing else in this world. I have nothing. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feelings. So all these things are detrimental if you're proud of these things. Srila Prabhupada. So in 1950, I retired, practically. Not retired, but a little in touch with business, whatever is going on. Then almost it became nil. Whatever was there, all right. You do whatever you like. Abai's wife independently moved along with her sons back to her father's house at 72 Mahatma Gandhi Road. She had reason that her financial support was becoming precarious. Abai was spending most of his time away from home. He was gradually disassociating himself with the family. When after several months, he would meet his wife and children. His father-in-law would criticize him. You are always going outside. You are always worshiping God. You are not looking after my family. Whenever he could, Abai would send his family some money. Mr. Sundir Kumar Dutta, Abai's nephew. I sometimes noticed how he was thinking so many things about his family, about his writings, about making bigger and bigger in business. What to do? What to do? He was thinking seriously to earn more money from his business. But that means he has to give more time for his business. And his writing, he'd never give up. He was writing more and more, and people sometimes abused him. Hey, you are writing religious things. You are only thinking of God. Then who will maintain your family? What will you do for the family? Sometimes he argued with them. What has this family given me? Why should I forget about God? This is the real thing, what I am doing. You cannot realize what I am doing. On a visit to Calcutta, Abai stayed at the home of his father-in-law, where he was given his own room. When his wife served him dinner, he noticed that everything had been purchased from the market. How is this? He asked. The cook is sick today, Radharani replied. Abai thought, it is better that we not live here at the home of her father, or else she will be spoiled even more. So he moved his family to a new address in Cheltla Street. Here he sometimes stayed with his family for a few months, writing articles and doing a minimal amount of business. But most of the time, he stayed in Allahabad. Just interesting what we were talking earlier, his wife, because the cook was gone, they just bought things, rather than her cook herself. Okay, I didn't end by the three dots, but it's getting late. So I'm ending at this spot here. I'll put the marker right there. There is a little space in between there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Prabhupada. That was very nice.
Thank you for listening.